Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Drum roll, guitar roll, trumpets and bass and sitars and everything. Welcome to Talking Tea on this beautiful June evening. And it's nice and cloudy out at the moment. And my co-host, Sean Boy, is over on the west. Good evening, Sean.
Good evening, John. Yeah, I'm talking to you here from... Well, it's a little bit overcast at the moment, but I'm here on Achill Island. But it was really beautiful here all day long. Really nice weather.
My heart goes out to you, but there you go. And, of course, we have Steve Roberts. How are you, Stephen? Is hosting again. You know, he's getting very good at this hosting thing. And he'll be hosting Sherry or Brazil after this as well. And so we can't stop the lad at all. He went down to Sherry for a couple of days, and sure, he hasn't stopped since. I don't know whatever she fed him. Whatever she did, but anyway, it's working. That's the main thing. So I hope you've all had a very good week. It's a kind of weird time of year, particularly with the warm weather, hot weather here in Ireland. There's nobody around during the days, and the football has started. I actually watched a football match last night, would you believe? And it wasn't bad. England are playing tonight, so a lot of guys might be watching England. They're playing Russia. I just saw a couple of minutes of it, and I just can't stand the commentators. I can't stand the commentators. They're just, it's, you think that the English team were at war, instead of playing a football match, but it's just absolutely irritating. And I see some of their fans are kicking up in Marseille and a few places. All sorts of nonsense going on there in that world. I just don't know why they bother, but there you go. So Ireland, I think, play on Monday, the fourth game. So it's something to do. It always happens when the weather is nice as well, if you're into that kind of thing. But these tournaments can be quite good at some time, you know. Other than that, in the real world, or the alternative world, Sean, we've had Ben Gilroy again come to the rescue in the high courts last night, in the four courts. Where the two boys were arrested outside the court. Where was it? Down in Castlebar or somewhere. Taken away to prison for contempt of court, and they outside the court. Now, I don't know what went down prior to that in the court, but I don't think much went on. And the guards came out, and they brought the boys in and arrested them and sent them to prison for 7 days, contempt. So... Ben went in again to do the habeas corpus thing. But this time, instead of all sorts of shenanigans going on and searching for books and everything, the state had no case prepared, and the state were not prepared to uphold the judge's sentence of these two men. Joe Ducey, you've heard Joe on Sean McGuire's show and everything else. And anyway, there was no case presented and the boys walked free. They were actually free before they went into the court. But still, he had to put up with that nonsense of spending time in a prison for what seems like he did absolutely nothing. And so that's two habeas corpuses in a week, folks, in a week. Maybe they're going on all the time. We don't know about it, but I don't think so. And this time, again, the lads are able to fight back because there was no case. So I think they can sue now for damages and inconvenience and all sorts of anxiety that's been caused and all of those things. So the tables are kind of turning in a way. Unfortunately, there isn't enough people doing it. We have Ben doing it and a few other people backing him up as he's doing it. I think he's in court now on Monday with his own home. And, you know, so the pressure's on. And I think we need bodies, folks. We need bodies. We need people to start... smartening up, including myself. But we can't be everywhere. And there's one thing I came across, Sean, last week was talking to people. The lack of understanding of the general public out there as to what we're about, not just what we're about, but what people are doing with the fight in the courts with corruption and particularly the mortgage situation and all that. And I've seen a video today across the water, Chrissy Morris. As you probably know, Chrissy Morris. I've seen Chrissy Morris he'd been on PIR a few times with the other lads, and I think he was arrested trying to prevent an eviction across the way in England. And he nearly, you know, he did very well, but I think the policeman arrested him because they were showing papers, the usual, but the guy wouldn't let go of the papers. He wouldn't actually physically give him the papers to bailiff. So even though he demanded them and asked to examine them, the policeman said, although he was only there to keep the peace, kept interrupting, saying that, he doesn't have to give you the papers. I know that it's all above board and everything else, but we all know, through Guy Taylor, through everybody, through Ben Gilroy, whether it's England, Ireland, or anywhere, that a lot of this paperwork is not actually proper. And just prevent people from looking at them and checking them out to see if they have the proper seals or the signatures or anything else. Well, a policeman or a guard who's interfering in that process like that is not being passive, and he's not just there to keep the peace. He's interfering, or they are interfering, with the process, promoting and helping the bailiffs or the sheriffs or whatever they're called, wherever they are. And I think it's time that the police forces and the Gardaí were trained somehow, or start to cop on as to exactly what they're being involved in. And because they're a policeman or a guard, the policeman was saying to Chrissy, oh, look, I have the choice to arrest you, and I don't really want to arrest you, but I have that choice, and I can make up my mind whether I can arrest you or not. You know, all this kind of thing. So they've become judge and jury and everything else, supposedly only in the capacity of keeping the peace. But they're actually interfering with the whole thing all the time. And these bailiffs and sheriffs, they depend on all that for the moral support and the so-called force support, as it were. And it's time maybe that, I don't know how to do it, but they need some sort of education in these processes as to exactly what is going on and what isn't going on and what they think is going on. There's a difference between myself or Sean or Steve or anybody thinking that something is going on. But we don't have, we do have the power of arrest, but it's never used. But we can't come and say to someone and threaten them, I'm going to arrest you. If I think I should be arresting you in case you're going to start off with a crime or break the peace, you know, that's the difference between a guy wearing a uniform and ourselves. So I think, Sean, what do you think? They need to be educated, just as much as the public need to be educated. And I'm a bit peeved over the fact that everybody I talk to, maybe I shouldn't talk to a lot of people or something, but they don't not get what's going on in this country. And they don't get it across in England either. And it looks very much like in America they don't get it either, even though if you're on social media, it appears to be that everybody is angry and everybody is supporting Ben Gilroy, People's Internet Radio, all the people who are doing their work, Guy Taylor, Across the Water, and various people. But in reality, out of the internet and the cyber world that we live in constantly, when you speak to people who don't have social media or not interested in social media in the way we are, they don't really know what's going on. And when I tell them stories about corruption, the solicitors, the bad so-called papers that they serve and everything, they can't believe it. They just do not believe it. It's like as if I'm coming in and telling them an episode of some movie that I saw somewhere. And it's a very weird feeling, actually. I feel as if I'm not either a part of that world. And unless I'm doing the radio, sometimes I don't feel like as if I'm part of the cyber world either. And it's a very strange position to be in. And I think, personally speaking, of course, it's always personally speaking, that we're under the impression that there are thousands or millions of us doing this. But in actual fact, I don't think there is. And if there is, they're not doing much about it. And that, to me, is a worry. Maybe I need to get some patience. And because on the flip side of that, which you know me, every week I contradict exactly what I'm saying. On the flip side of that, I see everybody using the information that we have here, but they're not using it in the correct manner, which is a good thing to see, and it's a good thing to know, but it's not quite right insofar as I saw a post the other night about and they were trying to warn people going in, and the post was good. Do not mention property when you're in the court. Do not mention this, that, and the other. And I had to correct it because they even said, do not mention dwelling. Now, you see, this is what's happening. Even though those people with the best will in the world are doing the very best that they possibly can, they're giving up their time, they're giving up their energy, they're giving up that they have a spirit about them and everything else. But how long and how often do we have to tell people that in Ireland that you must call your home or your house, whatever you call it, when you're in a court, you must call it a dwelling. Because property, home, real estate or any house or whatever can be misconstrued and can be used any way they want in their terminology in a court. Whereas dwelling has the one particular meaning. And we're very fortunate in Ireland to have Article 40.5 of the Constitution, which protects the dwelling and the person in the dwelling. Persons or people, man, woman, child, whatever you'd like to say. And that's a very, very big thing that we have in our favour. And they don't want us to use that thing in court. And I know these other people were doing their best, and I'm not criticising them because the gist of the post was very good. They were trying to warn people about what I'm actually saying. But I think in their enthusiasm while they're writing, they just put in the word dwelling, and I was going, no. Jeepers, you have to tell them, people, that you must call it a dwelling. It's very, very important, folks. All these little things are very, very, very important. They seem like something that you can skip over and get away with something, you know. Oh, well, they know what I mean. No, they don't know what you mean, because the reason they don't know what you mean when you go in there is because you don't know what they mean. It's what they mean that's important, not what you think you mean. So that's why we have to be so precise about things. And there's so many ways to handle things. And I was listening to Paul and Ray last night. It was great to hear the boys back. I was actually talking to them today. Thankfully, they're still as mad as ever. Thank God. And but they've been doing the civil and criminal thing in court already. So it's not new to them. And they're surprised that other people are starting to use it. And it seems like, well, we've been doing that. I mean, that's what we do. So we had a little discussion, Shawnee. I will allow you to talk sometime tonight, Shawnee. You're all right.
John. I'm relaxing away, Grant. You're doing well.
Well, I don't want you to fall asleep yet, you know. So,
I'm knitting here. I'm all right. I'm knitting a Bonnie hat for you here in Knackle Island.
Excellent. Yes.
You're making good points there, John, yeah.
Ray, hiya Ray in the chat box, Pat V, commonly known as Mark, Bonnie, super big fan, of course I've said hello to him already, TikTok to him, P.O., Pat Belden, Paul Storm, Eugene McFall, Free as a Board, Ernest Flat, Darby, and all the guys and girls, and John Bravo's in the chat box. Hiya, John, if you're listening, how are you doing? Good to see you back in the chat box. Anyway, now Ray's making a point. He says, those islands Johnny's on is not the place where that old chap who you interviewed lives. The chap who left home as a kid to pick spuds. Interesting chap. Well, you see, this is the very thing. We were planning to have Tom on with us tonight. And actually, I think he's a bit under the weather, but he may come on for the second half of the show because we know that he listens in. And I think it's fantastic. I said this before. Tom is what, 74 or 78 or 79? 76. Or 89 or 2001.
He's
76. 76 he is. And I think it's just fantastic not because of his age, well, that in a way, but coming from where he does, over the west of Ireland, a man of 76 who still has that contrarian spirit, I would say, Sean, would you say that?
Oh, definitely, yeah. And he's a very healthy man as well, like he's sure. Always
he lives on
he's lived a good life in relation to his diet and the likes of that, like it's a healthy he's living in a very healthy environment as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So Ray, hopefully we'll drag him on for some part of the show, because I want to ask him a few questions, not so much about his life, which is rather interesting, but if he's listening, Tom, I want to know what you think about what you're listening to when you do listen to PIR. I think that's very important, folks. Maybe he can give us his take on that. So, Tom, if you're listening, I know you're there. So get yourself organised, put on the kettle. And if you feel like jumping in any time, just come in and say hello. Some of the other people in the chat box would love to hear from you again, whether you're talking about your life or whether you're talking about things in general. Cool. That would be brilliant. So hopefully that's going to happen. In the meantime, you have to put up with me. And Shawnee has to put up with me and all of those things. But where I was going with this, Shawnee, is civil or criminal thing. Right, I'll explain to people why I want to talk about that. Because I was talking to the Ray and Paul today. And, you know, the way they are living the life at the moment in this regard. And everything they see now, they associate with civil or criminal or all the information that we have here on people's internet radio. And there's one thing I had to say to them, and this is the truth. And so I'm not here to give out about people because I know the situation because I've been there myself. And for a long time on people's internet radio or MSI radio or TNS radio, whatever we were called, I was hearing as a newbie, I was coming on and I was listening to, is it civil or criminal? Civil or criminal? Civil or criminal? If you go to the meetups, the conversations were based around civil or criminal and trying to catch you out with world hockey or tennis, you know. And I used to say to myself, I looked at it, and at one stage we had cartoon drawings, somebody in front of the judge, you know, and is it civil or criminal, George? And I'm, truthfully now, I was looking at them and was saying, what are they talking about? What the hell are they talking about? Civil or criminal, civil or criminal. And to me, it didn't seem to be effective. It didn't seem to hit home. Like all the solutions, folks, at first they appear to be very, very simple. However, when you start using them and when you get to understand what they actually are, they are incredibly complex, but they're incredibly simple at the same time. And I want to talk about civil and criminal for this reason only. Because this is why it's important. Because in any court, in any land, or in any solicitor's office, barrister's office, or QC, or whatever they are, from the time that they start to go to college to the time that they retire, whether they retire as judges, whether they retire as barristers, as solicitors, as juniors, or whatever else, there's only one question that they have to answer from day one in college to the very last day that they present themselves in court to do work for somebody. And that is to determine whether or not the case that they're looking at is either civil or criminal. That's what they spend their whole lives going on about. Civil or criminal. You have to think about that for a little while. Is it civil or criminal? And they are the two distinct things in law. There is nothing else. Everything goes into either one or the other of those categories. Civil is banking, fraud, tickets, all a myriad of things. Criminal is where somebody was harmed, basically. That is it. That is it, folks. And yes, the courts are, they're there to make money, and they're administration courts, and there's this court, and it's all that. However, there's still only two categories. Civil or criminal. If you're in front of the beak or the judge and he's asking you a question, if you ask the question, is it civil or criminal? Let's say, for instance, you didn't fill out your census form and they come and drag you in there for this because you've been a naughty man, bold boy, or bold girl. Well, is not signing a census form civil or criminal? Let's say the judge says, it's civil. What do you say? Well, I recall signing no such contract because everything in civil is a contract. Everything. Doesn't matter what it is. It's a contract. Me speaking to you, you listening to me, is a kind of a contract. Myself and Shawnee, if we're talking, we sign up contracts every time we're talking and we have our barristers beside us just in case we don't. No, we don't. But you see what I'm saying? The judge says it's criminal. Well, where is the injured party? You see? So if it's criminal, you had to have injured somebody or harmed somebody about something. These 2 weeks, We've had two cases of habeas corpus that I know of. The first one, was it civil or criminal? The judge had said that the contempt was criminal. And it was pointed out to them by the information given by People's Internet Radio, Vin, to Ben and the rest of them, which entirely at the end of the day, after much, two sets of barristers, lots of books, five books this called for, and everything else. And even though they deal with civil or criminal all the time, nobody ever asks them, you see. And this is the amazing thing about it. It's only two words, but they're never asked, is it civil or criminal? If you're stopped on the road by a policeman or a guard or whatever, and they're talking to you, you can ask them, is it civil or criminal? Anybody that wants to come at you with somebody serving your papers or someone, you don't know whether they have a badge or whether the badge is truthful or whether it isn't or not, is it civil or criminal? Now, I know you don't go around all day. I don't go around all day thinking these things either. However, when you're in that situation and when that question is asked, it's very, very powerful because immediately it distinguishes between one thing or another. Now, whether they can arrest you for a civil matter, when you've done no harm to anybody, that's debatable, you see. Now, if you've gone and you've hit somebody or you've done something or smashed something or broken something on somebody and somebody saw you, right. But this is the way to determine which is which. Because in either civil or criminal, they both carry different penalties in the judge's eyes and the rules of the courts. There's a huge difference. You can go to jail for civil matters. You could say non-payment of tax is a civil matter, but they treat it as a kind of a criminal matter, but nobody asks where's the law to say that I must pay it. You know, all that kind of thing. And Paul and Ray have had to use it themselves and use it to great effect in the course of last year. So, and we were discussing this, Shawnee, where we have this information in our heads, but we don't always get the opportunity to use it. Now, I don't want anybody getting arrested just to try this out, you know. But it made a huge difference to a man that was put in jail for nothing over a contempt issue, which is just a whim, it seems, at this stage by these particular judges. Not all of them, a lot of them. In civil cases. We're talking about civil cases here, which is basically a contract with somebody, or you don't have a contract with somebody. And we've got to stop this nonsense going on in the courts. And the two wins, last week and this week, may actually prevent this from happening to other people, to some extent, because it put the brakes on these people, because they're using them, and I'm not sure whether they remember things, whether they slip up, whether they, you know, and in most cases, let's say you're in court and something happens and they put you in jail for a few days. You're not really going to feel like that you're going to attack these people because they're after punishing you already. So a lot of people don't follow through on things because there's still that fear of following through and asking these very powerful people questions of themselves because they always seem to be belligerent towards you and I and the public at large. That's why the public have lost respect for these people, because they're not respecting the public. And this is it's a breakdown of respect. Now, either we change that and either get them to change, which is probably an impossible task, or either they change and do the right thing rather than doing this power trip, ego power trip thing all the time. And this is what we're up against. But the kernel of what I'm saying, Sean, is that as I say, it appears that an awful lot of people know all this information and it is seeping in down through, out into the public arena insofar as, I've seen stuff that I've been talking about on Saturday nights in the newspapers in slightly different guises, but at particular times, about the Constitution, about 1916, 1919 and various things from the most, let's say unexpected sources. So we do know that what we say, and we are not experts, but we're learning, what we say is filtering down through, but are we reaching the masses? I don't think so. And this is where we have a big problem, because I'm here 4 years, 5 years or something, but Sean is around since 1916 rising, I'm not sure. Then.
Very, very complimentary there. Yeah, but John, I suppose really what you're talking about is about education, right? I mean, and unless you're in need of remedies like you're talking about, people for the most part won't be seeking this information. But I would agree with you, it is starting to filter out amongst people slowly but surely. And I suppose that's come about because primarily people's internet radio is about seeking solutions and seeking truths. Like, that's always been the tenet of people's internet radio. And I suppose if we can all stay in the spirit of that, you know, that message will permeate, you know, because there's lots of honesty and decency behind it. And I think fundamentally that's what people are looking for, you know.
Yeah.
We do know we live a better society by creating a more honest one, you know.
This is the ironic part of it all is that the reason we're all here is because of a situation that has been foisted upon us. And I would say an awful lot of people, particularly in America and England and now here, and it will hit Australia very soon. There's no doubt about it. It will hit Australia and this property thing and the mortgages and the scams and the mortgage end of things. And they've been living with it in America for a long time, seemingly, and they seem to think that they couldn't do anything about it. And because of the fundamental sort of idea in America that you pay your way, you know. So if you put that meme into people's minds from the time you're a baby and get up off your ass and get yourself a job. And actually, I saw somebody writing who was another radio station saying instead of people asking for donations on internet sites and people begging under bridges, go get yourself a job. Well, I thought, wow, that's unbelievable for somebody in the alternative media to be saying that to people. Maybe there's a time when jobs are plentiful and everything is okay and you can have a job for life that you might be able to get away with saying something like that to people. But in this day and age, if you have a job and you're working and you're okay and you're comfortable, well, fair play to you and good luck to you, you know. But for the young people coming up these days, the reality of that is not quite that way at all. In fact, it's very difficult anymore for a young man to get a job as an apprentice, anything, and to have that apprenticeship for the 5 years or whatever the course takes. So we're going to have a lot of or people who aren't trained doing the trades. And if you look at the overall picture, Sean, that the people who technically build things, participate in building, or the man on the farm who is participating in keeping us alive by growing the food, looking after the animals, slaughtering them and making them into beef burgers and all the rest of it. Outside of all those industries, besides care and medical, let's say, unless somebody is producing something and making something, the only other jobs are people who work in offices, who only push bits of paper from one office to another office, calculate something, and then they seem to be the ones that get the most pay, the people who actually do the physical work on the ground, like the farmer, like the carpenter, like the electrician, like the bricklayer, and anybody who works in those industries, the mechanic, you know, all of these things. These are the people who have the countries, whatever way they are. Not the people who are pushing the pens and who are determining whether you get social welfare or not after you've paid all your taxes and all the rest of it. And over in Ireland, we have a huge civil service here in this country. Absolutely huge. It seems like if you're not working for the civil service, you ain't going to have a job for very long. So that person who's writing that, get a job and stop begging and looking for donations, I think that's disgusting. From somebody in the alternative, I would question that person, their idea of being in the alternative media and what sort of a life that they're living. And I won't name them, but I might some other time. And it pisses me off because it's like, well, I'm going to tell you what to do. And I don't really have the time to find out, well, why is that man homeless? Why is that man not got a job? Why are all the young people emigrating to all over the world Yes, travel is brilliant and everything else. But when it's a necessity, it's a different thing. You know, the migrant situation because of war in Syria and all the rest of it, and everybody's getting up in arms about Muslims and migrants and all the rest of it. Half of Ireland are migrants in other countries and have been since the 1850s and before. And we're talking about millions of people here over the years, folks. Millions. So I don't go, the migrant thing doesn't cut the mustard with me. Immigrant and emigrants are the same to me. An emigrant is an immigrant in another country. And an immigrant is an emigrant from another country. And you can't applaud the Irish emigrant and, oh, the flight of the geese and all this. No, they're no different than the Muslim, whether it's a Muslim or a Jew or a Christian or anything, coming from another country just because they have a different language and a different skin. Exactly what happened to the Irish people. Exactly what happened to them right up to the 60s. And so anybody in the alternative media pushing that sort of meme, you're going to hear something from me because I think it's disgraceful. Now you're getting me to rant. But that's how I feel about it. I think we have to really get a grip on what it is that we're trying to achieve. And I'm saying this, Sean, because you just put the nail on the head. What exactly are we trying to do here? We're only trying to make a fairer society and get people knowledge about Ireland's history, the law, how it affects you, and is it legal, is it right, is it moral, is it ethically right, etc., etc. Because they've been running headlong into this sort of tornado type thing, and they just nobody was stopping them, you know. They just kept going and going and going. And until somebody stops them from doing particular things, they will keep doing it. Like children, you know. No different on this side of the fence. But what is it that PIR, the people on PIR come to? What do they come here for? What have they come here for over the years? All the different hosts, all the different people with all their different ideas about what is truth, what isn't truth, what's real, what isn't real. I never heard any of them, not one of them, whether you liked them or whether you didn't like them, whether you got on with them or whether you didn't get on with them, ever say or any of them had any plans to actually start taking over things for the benefit of themselves. Never are you going to hear that. I've never heard it. And if I do hear it, well, I wouldn't be here if that's what anybody was thinking of. But I know nobody's thinking like that. So how is it, Sean, that here we are, all us lay people, certain ages in life, learning all this stuff and trying to get people to clue into it and get things changed for the benefit of everybody? And why do we get so much negativity around us because of that?
Well, I suppose fundamentally we've all been we've all become united around an issue where probably most of us have got into financial trouble at some stage or whatever, you know. And for the most part, it wasn't necessarily our own fault, but we're just participants in a system that probably most likely doesn't support equity or fairness. As regards, you were talking there earlier on about people with jobs and not having jobs. Like most people that have jobs, they're having to work their socks off to keep a roof over their head. Most people have to pay for three houses to have the privilege to live in one. That's basically what you're nearly doing when you have a mortgage. There's nothing fair about that. Then the other problem then is if you don't have a job, the people that don't have jobs don't have access to credit because they don't have a job. Mm-hmm. So how can you condemn people on the side of the street or people out of work? And people condemn for not being or saying that they're useless, go away and get a job or whatever.
Yeah.
We're moving more and more into a technological age where there are less jobs.
Yeah.
And so you have a credit system that actually doesn't support people that don't have jobs.
That's
so
right.
It's a ludicrous. It's absolutely ludicrous, right? I mean, there's and as we know, at the end of the day, credit is, well, apparently is created out of the ether or whatever, you know.
Someone determines.
Someone has Someone is running that system somewhere.
Right, Sean. I think we'll just print a few more, a billion this month or this year. What are we allowed to print this year, Sean? I don't know, John. Was it half a billion last year? Well, I think it's a billion this year. Okay, so we might as well print a billion. Who determines that? When you think about it, who determines that? Has anybody ever met the man that determines that and said, oh, I used to work with this guy. You know, he was the fella that told them how much they had to print. Now, I do know, years ago, there was a mint factory up in Coolock, and they went to, but they would print the money for different countries. They wouldn't print it for Ireland. So you've also got that as well, that they have somebody printing it. The Irish money was probably printed somewhere else for Ireland, and Ireland was printing money for Sweden or, say, somewhere else. I don't know where they were printing the money for. I don't know whether it was notes or coinage, but somebody is making that decision, and I've never seen or heard, now that I think about it, has anybody ever met anybody that was in that position or that knew of anybody that was in that position that somebody sat around and said, oh, well, I had a pint with a fella and he used to work in the mint, and they were told by Sean that next month they were going to be printing stuff for Poland, and they had to print so many million, whatever, with krona, whatever they use. And then I've never heard of anybody speaking like that. Have you, Sean?
Yeah, no, not really. I wouldn't have access to that type of conversation anyway in the first place.
I don't think anybody ever had in the history of the planet. But somebody has to have it. Who are these people that has that conversation? Is it the central banks? Well, our central bank doesn't print money anymore. And the European Central Bank, I'm not sure whether they print money. We know that the Fed prints money and sells it to the American government. Other than that, who says how much they print? Who determines it? So we have Argentina, or is it Venezuela or Venezuela or whatever, that the lads were talking about last night, that the people are totally impoverished at the moment. That there is no money. It's gone. It's like that thing. Oh, there's your money. Oh, I'll put your money in this account. Oh, sorry, it's gone. So Venezuela, isn't it? Where mass corruption or whatever's going on, and there's nobody doing anything, and there's no money. So who's the man that says, you've printed too much, you haven't printed enough, let's print more? But it's okay if someone decides in Europe, well, I think we'll print more to alleviate the situation. Well, if you take a pound and it's supposed to be worth 20 shillings or whatever, and you print, it only has that value of 20 shillings if you print so many pounds. Okay? If I decide, myself and Sean get together, and we're over in Achill Island with Tom, and Tom says, I think the best way to do it now is to print some more money. Well, then if you print millions and millions more of that pound note hasn't got the value of that pound note. How could it possibly have that value? So how do they gauge the value of it? Oh, they use a gold meter, right? But we all know now that there isn't that amount of gold in the world, unless they found some on the moon the last time somebody was up there, if they were up there. So who determines all these questions that are governing millions and millions, billions of people's lives all around this planet? So technically it comes out of somebody's head, an idea, somebody physically gets it done, but who gives the order to print? And it's all signed, sealed, and it's all done under this kind of legal, semi-legal, honourable, I don't know what the word you would use for it. And we have Venezuela now, people are beginning to starve, and the production of everything is gone, you know. Which, and when I was listening to the boys, I was saying, now is the time for people to really get it. And I don't want to start talking about mathematically perfected economy. But are we going to, the question that raised in my mind, Sean, is, now we know the way money is printed, how it comes into existence. There's Lottie, you see, there you go. There's always somebody in the chat box that has an answer to everything. There's Lottie. Thank you very much. Polish money, that is, Sean. So we know how money is created or not created, either out of thin air or so-called equity or gold, but that's all very suspect. And nobody can actually define it and gauge it properly and say, oh yes, here's the evidence for that to back up that. We know that that really isn't the case. We see pictures of gold. I think there's a few gold bars around and they keep putting them into different stacks and taking pictures of them in different locations and photoshopping all these things, that this is the wealth of the country. being guarded by some idiot in a uniform, and he's guarding the gold bullion, you know. It's all nonsense, Sean. It's absolute fucking nonsense. And are we in Ireland, England, America, are we going to let it get to the stage where it's happening in Venezuela before somebody says, oh, I heard about this thing called MPE, mathematically perfected economy. What's that about? Well, a pound is a pound, you know. And after you've finished, when you pay it back, that money is taken out of circulation, because then the value is sustained with the current circulation, the money that's actually in circulation. Oh, is that right? Yeah, okay. That sounds like a good idea. Well, the only fortunate thing is, nobody wants to listen to that. In the years that I've been here, nobody wants to hear it. But everybody tells me about the problems. So when are we going to actually say, look, we know what the problems are? I understand, folks, that I'm not giving out to you all, because there is an essential problem here with MPE. And all it is people can't figure out how to actually implement it. And I don't think it's that difficult, but I can't tell you for 100% certain how to implement it. But let's say, Sean, tomorrow Ireland turns into Venezuela, which is very, very likely. I mean, we must be actually next door to Venezuela or any country, and God help those people in those countries who are depending on pieces of paper to keep them alive, because everybody decides that I can't do anything because those pieces of paper are not available and people are actually starving. The buses aren't working. I don't know what the situation is. The bins aren't being collected. The train drivers aren't working. There's no production going on, and everybody's going around in this malaise. Oh, we have no money and we can't do anything and all the rest of it. So all our lives on the entire planet of the world depends on somebody deciding to print pieces of paper. And once we have that piece of paper, well, then I can go and I can drive that bus. And I can go out and then start planting my fields and driving the tractor. Or I can start making those cars again. Or I can start cutting wood and making furniture. But I can't do any of those things if I don't have a piece of paper. Is that not insanity, Sean? Or am I going insane?
Yeah. Well, it's okay. A little bit of insanity is okay now and again. I think probably what humanity is suffering from the most is limited. We've got a limited imagination. And we're all suffering and sucked into being victims of the system that's there. I mean, solutions come from one's imagination. And money at the end of the day is only, or at the beginning of the day is only the interaction of energy and information. So the creation of money is probably everybody's responsibility.
Well,
so
it is like a lack
only
of
a means. What? Pardon?
I like that term, lack of imagination. It is totally lack of imagination.
Yeah.
Because if I don't have something that says a euro on it, but I used to have something that said a punt on it. Before that, I had another Irish punt. And before that, you know, was the punt, the pound, the green pound. So let's say we've no money here in Ireland. And let's say Ray Moore comes over and says, John, I'm after bringing this heap of zlotys with me. And that's money, and plenty of works in Poland. But you can't use it over here. Well, there probably isn't Poland anymore. They must have the euro. Let's say, and some country that has the zloty, right? So you bring the zloty over here, and myself and Ray have buckets of it, billions of them. What are the people going to say? Ah, I can't take that. That's no use here in this country. You know, well, it is money. It's actually valid in that country. And people drive the buses and do the farming and make the furniture and go to school and build houses and do all those things and the civil servants and everybody's working and getting paid in this currency. Well, you can't use that currency here. But the people are starving and the people can't get to work and they can't do anything because you have no currency because all the money's gone.
And the other interesting thing about money, you see, actually, people are living under a little bit of an illusion that think that by having money, it makes them wealthy. Or you can become wealthy. But, and we have sort of defined wealth in materialistic terms, acquired through this thing called money. But, so like wealth generation is probably the highest agenda that we should be striving for in terms of like we all should be striving to be wealthy in not so much in money terms, but in I suppose you could call it a right livelihood, you know, and that we do have meaningful lives, that we have meaningful jobs, that we have meaningful relationships, and we have meaningful societies, that we have meaningful structures in our societies. We have loads of education, but we have very little learning. And what do we end up with then? Like, we end up going through lives, a lot of stress, a lot of strains, and most of us, if not all of us, die for the most part undignified deaths. We all die. Most of us die with diseases and suffering. You know, we've still a long ways to go. And it doesn't really matter whether you're rich or poor. Like, most humans are not dying healthy as such. You know, we're not dying healthy. We're not coming to healthy, happy ends to our lives. And that happens both for the rich and the poor.
Absolutely.
It's often the case that poor people can die much happier than the rich men.
Yeah. No, that's they are the nuances of life in lots of ways. But because of money,
we're missing out on the bigger picture a lot of the things. Like, we're
exactly
just getting carried away. You have families breaking up over money. You have a whole load of relationship dynamics going astray over money.
Yeah. With industries built on the money system, industries that are taking over production, they're taking over everything, through the legalese, they're taking over, you name it, the TTIP thing, these agreements and all the rest of it. It's farcical. I mean, it really is, stupidity of the highest order. So
you have millions of people suffering from diseases such as cancers and all degenerative diseases, and you have systems in place so that there's certain people can profit from other people's misery. Like, you have a cancer industry and you have a degenerative diseases industry. It's a huge multi-billion euro or dollar or whatever denomination you want to call it, industries.
Yeah.
And it's run by people, you know, that seem to want to keep that system going. While at the same time, there are many, many alternative cures out there and things for people to avail of, like, but it seems the system doesn't want to know about it. The official system doesn't want to know about them because there's no money in them.
Yeah.
Natural cures, you know, for the most part, common sense solutions to can be very difficult situations for people.
I think MPE is a natural solution to the money problem.
Definitely, yeah. Definitely.
Without a shadow of a doubt. I know it's a big subject, but it's like the elephant in the room, that the one thing that's damaging everybody on the planet, in one way or another, is the money system and the money aspect of things. And yet, just like the medical thing, where there are a variety of different ways to handle different diseases and people are experimenting and doing all that, why at this stage are we not experimenting and trying to set up MPE in whatever form we can, even if it's amongst a certain amount of people at a particular time, to see how it goes? Let's say we're in the situation of Venezuela next week, and over a period of 2 weeks, things deteriorate to such a point that people are looting and probably starving and all the rest of it, all for the sake of another monetary system, where, as far as I can understand, MPE, you do not have to have the physical money. You can use a computer, you know, and it can be started off very simply by calculating what your wealth is at the moment, insofar as, let's say, the present day terms of value of anything, whether you have a car, motorbike, bicycles, a boat, a house, tools, jewellery, whatever. And if you totted them all up and said, well, this is what I'm worth at the moment, technically, and say, well, that's your opening account. and come up with a system using computers to say, well, I'll trade with Sean using this system, and I'll trade with Pat over in Scotland and Ray over in England and Tom over in west of Ireland, whatever, and Steve in America. And we decide, okay, John, you have something I want. Well, I'll give you so many of this and so many of that. And there you go. And it comes out of your account, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And you apply the other roles and the rules of MPE as regards the lifetime of a product. Do you not think that the situation in Venezuela or any other country in that position is crying out? And it's, as I say, it's the elephant in the room, but nobody is prepared to begin it. Like, it's kind of weird. It doesn't make sense, John.
Well, I suppose, John, it's like the present financial system is such, it is bigger than an elephant in the room. Like, it's much bigger than that. And to try and implement a new system is no small task. And but what I would suggest, I mean, there are many people here on People's Internet Radio and the chat box and whatever. You know, some of us are going to have to take an initiative and either get a think tank going on us, get, again, it goes back to our imaginations.
Yeah.
There has been systems like this tried in the past, different systems. Some of them have worked, more of them haven't, whatever. But until such time as groups of, see, if we keep all talking as individuals about this, nothing will move. I think we need to have either a forum or a gathering together, a seminar some Saturday or something, a complete day set aside to initiate something like this so that there can be a core group of people get together and, and see, can something be done? I mean, maybe it's not us that'll initiate it, but maybe there's younger people coming behind us that will take the bull by the horns, so to speak, and drive it on. Who knows? But the least we can do is be gathering in groups and talking about it and discussing it and trying to initiate something.
Mm-hmm.
Like if we don't try, if like People's Internet Radio, one of the things I don't like about People's Internet Radio, and I'll be frank, it for a lot of the time it can become just nothing else but a pure talking shop.
Sure.
And you know, we're no different than the fellas going down to the pub tonight and chatting about something over a half a dozen points, like, and still the world is the same the next day, you know?
Yeah.
Like, we have to, if we want change in the world, we have to initiate change.
Yeah.
We have to maybe prepare to make a few mistakes. You know, maybe some of us might have to end up in jail for making mistakes for others to learn, so be it.
Well, that is happening, isn't it?
Yeah, that is happening. And but you know, people that are putting their best foot forward with limited information, what they know and what they're doing, they're still doing the best they can with the information they have, and that is helping others.
Yeah.
You know, there's a saying going, like, it's a lot easier to be critical than to be correct.
Yeah. That's true. There's correctness too that isn't right.
Yeah. But really, we would want to start initiating things like mathematically perfected economy is definitely a workable model. It does make economic sense. But the questions we have to address is how can we implement such a model in Ireland? Like, is it possible? We really need to have a serious discussion around that subject.
Yeah. Well,
definitely. That needs to be done.
Well, at the moment, Sean, we're under pressure. Steve has to imbibe himself with something. I don't want him falling down from lack of hunger and all the rest of it. So we'll have to take a little break, which we're not going to go
on. Yeah.
So he's on a special diet now, of course, you know, so. We have to make sure he has his energy up. So I'll tell you, we'll take a little break, and maybe Tom might join us. And,
yeah, if I can get a hold of Tom, I'll see what would he is. Would he be up for,
if he does, he does, and if he doesn't, he doesn't. Sure, but it'd be nice.
I know he has some visitors with him in the house tonight, so it may not be possible. So, okay. I'll check in with him.
Yeah, okay.
Wait. And see what the story is. So he's a pretty popular man at the same time, like, and he gets lots of callers, like, so.
Indeed.
Okay.
Right. I think we'll take two tunes. They're relatively short tunes. I chose all Beach Boy music today, folks, simply because it's summertime and kind of it's light and it's brilliant and it's musical and it's all those wonderful things, and it gives a feeling of summer is here. So, Steve, a couple of tunes, please, and we'll be right back after them, folks. Thanks very much. Welcome back, folks. Bit of the Beach Boys there, a bit of summer surfing and various bits and pieces. They've done this 50-year recording of some of the Beach Boys, but of course the drummer died, bass player. Can't remember the names. They were Wilsons. And various, Al Jardine and a couple of other guys. I actually saw sort of Mike Love, and it was not Al Jardine, it's another guy who was with them at some stage, and sort of a tribute band. They were absolutely amazing. To hear the music live is just an experience, a totally different experience to all the other music I'll be listening to. And you just get the full benefit of beautiful harmonies and the vocal lines. Absolutely incredible stuff. But there you go. And Sloop John B reminds me of when I was a young fella and all the pop music was coming out and all that kind of thing. And released around summertime, so there's real summer feeling about the thing. That's it, really. I don't want to go into it too much, but bore the head off people. So anyway, Tom is very busy, I'm afraid, Ray, and he has visitors, and he's in full flight there. He has an audience already, so we'll be getting him back on, definitely. He's a man that knows about the money markets as well, so I'm hoping to have him on where we can discuss all these various aspects of what we discuss here, because he's terribly interested in a lot of what we do here on the radio, which is absolutely amazing. And I'm sure he has some gems of wisdom and knowledge, Sean, to pass on to us, whether it be positive or negative, I don't know. But that's People's Internet Radio for you, folks. Anybody's welcome to call in too and say their piece and give their opinions and whatever else at any time, tonight or any other show. Everybody's welcome. So feel free if you want to do that. Super Big Bad Man, I think, is the Skype. Maybe Steve will put that into the chat box. If anybody feels like having an hour chat or joining in on what myself and Sean here are talking away. Sean is having a big sandwich. I think Tom or Margie made him a big sandwich there now. And so everybody's fed and watered, and we're back on track. And already, Sean, it's 10:15. Would you believe that?
Yeah, I'm not fed up, but I'm just loaded up with food here now. I've got a great kitchen inside there, so.
So, Super Big Bad Man.
He's not able to come on with us tonight, so.
It's okay.
We've got too many visitors.
Well, as I say, we will have Tom back on. What happens, folks, is that each week, sometimes we have lots to discuss. Sometimes we have the luxury of maybe going off on a different theme. But we also, I like to try and keep it current in the sense of maybe what's going on during the week. I had Ben on last week. I wasn't going to ask him back on again this week. And there wasn't much to talk about yesterday insofar as it was all done and dusted very easily and very quickly, which was brilliant. So, he has other things to do. And last week, Ben came on. And he was out with the children and all the rest for a day out. And so sometimes it's not, particularly at the weekends, people are busy and trying to catch up on family life and all of those things, which we all kind of have, folks. We have families and we have situations and everything else to contend with and the rest of the week, other than the 2-hour shows. In fact, I should have been at a 24th birthday, and I know they won't be listening. My niece was 21 during the week, and I want to wish her a happy birthday. I hope she has a great night. And my sister-in-law's birthday was yesterday as well. Happy birthday, Mags. And also two other people in the family had their birthdays all this week, about 4 birthdays this week. So there you go. So they're off out gallivanting there on the 21st. And the people who host are tin on the ground here at the moment. and backup people are thin on the ground, and it's summertime and all of those things. So there you go. That's the way, that's life.
Somebody has to keep their shoulder to the wheel and get it, John.
The show must go on, you know. It's the old music thing. Go ahead, Sean.
Yeah. When I went into Tom there earlier on, I was chatting, he was telling me that there's, seemingly there's a lot of ructions in France tonight with the English and Russian fans or something, seemingly.
Really?
A lot of violence and fighting and whatever going on.
That's unusual, isn't it?
You were talking at the start of the show about the English commentators, and they're talking about as if it was like going to a war. So obviously the war has broke out in Marseille or somewhere tonight.
Yeah. Mm. Well, that's sad, isn't it? I mean, it really is. It's pathetic. I mean, they were outside some Irish pub over somewhere in France yesterday, and screaming in anti-IRA songs and stuff to the people inside who were just playing, it seemed, looked like traditional Irish music or whatever. But see, the ironic thing about those guys is, and it's not because they're English, but the fact that they seem to do this all the time, every time there's a tournament. But the fact that those guys would be, whether it's an Irish fan or a Northern Ireland fan or a Polish fan or whatever, on the ordinary league games, week in, week out for the rest of the soccer season, that these guys are standing beside each other supporting whatever team they support. And they're probably all having a pint together after the match, whether you're Irish, English, whatever, if you support Arsenal, West Ham, Liverpool, Manchester United, and they're all from different countries, and they're all from all over the world, and they're all different colours, and they're all different creeds, religions and everything, but they're wearing a Manchester United shirt on. And it only happens when they start wearing the short of the country. It's the same game. It's the same fans. It's the same people who enjoy that sport. And yet, they bring it to a level of always something that's nothing got to do with anything. It's very odd. I just, they'd like to mar everything. And of course, they're, training the French police now to throw more tear gas at innocent people, perhaps passing by or whatever, and they'll make a big deal about it and of course bring in stricter laws and stricter conditions, stricter rules for anybody who is into just going to enjoy a football match and a competition like the Europe thing or the World Cup or something, and it's not good for any nation or for any people. It's not good for the spirit. It's not good for anything. And as I say, all it's going to do, bring in is more control for the rest of the people,
Oh yeah, definitely, yeah. More rules, more regulations.
Mm. That's all. That's all it ever brings. Yeah, less freedom, more tear gas, more weapons, more batons, more these the uniforms that they're putting on the police in different countries now is absolutely hilarious. It's like looking at RoboCop. They're padded up. And actually, I saw one on Facebook there during the week. It was, I think it was from last year. I think it was in London. What was happening in London last year? Was it somebody's birthday or the Queen? I don't know. Something was happening anyway. And there was a few people in this park and they were kind of activists or anti-whatever. And a group of policemen came up and the guy who put up the video was saying that like the robots have arrived. We're living in this alternative society. And when you looked at the video, the police over there, they looked rather strange. The colour of their skin, they all seemed to be very pale, even though there was an Indian guy there and all, different nationalities within the police force over there in London, as you know. But they had their eyes, they were just staring like robots. It was really not scary, but creepy. It was like as if they were being controlled somewhere. Anyway, the guy had the sense to look at it and say, look at this. This is what we have now policing us. And it did really look for all the thing that somebody, that these guys were being controlled mentally somewhere. They were just staring blankly. The guys weren't doing much, They were doing nothing with handbag stuff. They weren't even annoying anybody, but they wanted to corral them. But it was kind of sinister looking at these people. So I don't know anybody who knows people who were in the police force or the Gardaí or the army. if you have a relative in these organizations. Are they going around like robots these days? Are they, what are they like when they're at home? What are they like when they're out with their friends? Or do they have any friends? Or do they all just mix together? Or I don't know anymore. They seem to be a different part of society. And looking at all these soldiers, every time you put up something, I actually got a friend request last week, and it was a picture of a woman in soldier's uniform from some Eastern European country, and which is spamming, you know. But I just thought, well, that's weird. Whether I don't think they know who John McCann is on People's Internet Radio, but you wouldn't know. And they might be trying to stop us from doing, not just us, everybody, from changing people's minds and changing people's attitudes towards each other and various things. So it's gone very, very, very strange, folks. Very, very strange.
Yeah, well, I suppose, I think we are probably still very lucky here in Ireland, John, because while the police force and the guys in the army, whatever, you know, for the most part, when they do go home, most of these guys are involved in community based initiatives, whether it be GAA or soccer clubs or whatever, you know, or rugby clubs. And a lot of that is very parochial as well, like it's very communal. Yeah. And because we have a small country, that can happen. And most, a lot of people get to know each other through sporting organizations. And that has to be good for community. And but maybe they don't have that to that same extent in England, you know. Because I suppose a lot of the sports there are very commercialized and whatever, and because it's such a big population.
Yeah.
Maybe people are lacking that sort of communal spirit that we still have it here, you know.
Possible, yeah.
Yeah, and it's probably good for us as a nation. We're probably overlooking the good side of that, you know.
Yeah, well.
I only heard today that actually the fastest growing sports in England are Gaelic football and hurling.
Really?
Yeah, that's my lad, an Irish lad living in London, said that to me today. He says the fastest growing sports in England at the moment are Gaelic football and hurling.
Right.
And he was telling me
Sky.
Well, I suppose, yeah, maybe the Sky, the fact that, both Gaelic football and hurling are really spectacles to watch. Like, I mean, people that are interested in sport, obviously get a kick out of watching them. But, he was also telling me that he's got kids going to a particular school in, I think, in Hertfordshire or somewhere. And there's, a girl comes in, once or twice a week, teaching the kids in the school Gaelic football, and this day she has over 30 kids playing Gaelic football, ranging in ages sort of from 7 up to 11 or 12 of all different nationalities. Like, that's a good news story, you know. Like, I enjoyed hearing that. I mean, it's again what I was saying earlier on. Yeah, that comes down to initiative. Like, that's one girl on her own initiative decided to do that and bring Irish sports into an English school.
Yeah.
And seemingly the teachers are delighted with her, and the parents of the kids that are playing Gaelic football, they are seemingly are happy out as well with that whole dynamic. So.
Yeah. Well, it was never.
You know, there's a lot of things we can do.
It was never supposed to be exclusive to Ireland, you know.
No, it never was. I mean, so maybe there can be good come out of the fact that like Sky Sports have taken, or that the GAA have contracted with them, if they played their cards right in relation to that, and that we can spread Irish culture much more across the pond and everything, you know, and. Develop the values that are good within sport, not this hooliganism. Like, I mean, definitely GA sports and rugby. Like, unfortunately, soccer has just got seemed to have a huge rowdy element attached to it for whatever reasons.
Yeah.
But and it's unfortunate because like there are a lot of good people involved in soccer clubs, and soccer clubs are serving communities well as well. So
absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
But it's probably, you were saying earlier on the start, the like this sort of garbage that a lot of the commentators go on with this soccer analogies and all this, and sort of adding a lot of patriotic fervor into their commentaries and the like, you know, I mean.
Yeah, well, there was words like superior and, you know, the second wave of attack and all this kind of stuff. It's rather strange. It's more like a battle than a game.
And they're probably calculated comments as well. Like they're not just off the cuff comments. I would contend that they're very calculated to achieve a certain result.
Well, you notice it more when you don't hear it for such a long time, and then you switch on and say, "Okay, I'll have a look and see what's happening." And you're listening to this stuff, you know, and it jars the mind. It jumps out at you. But if you were listening to that week in, week out, which they do to a lesser degree in the league games, you become brainwashed with it. It's like, you know, people have their favourite sports presenters and stuff like that. It's quite extraordinary. It really is. It's quite extraordinary. I can't explain it. Like, I saw a video today of the Queen's speech when she was over here 2 years ago. And the question somebody had put up, the Act, the English UK Parliament Act of 1949, where in it says that, you know, the Republic of Ireland wasn't a dominion or had nothing to do with the UK anymore. And someone was saying, well, it was in relation to the Brexit thing and England possibly leaving the European Union, which I don't think is going to happen, but it would be a good thing. Probably. I don't know whether anything is good or bad anymore, but certainly Europe has got way out of control. I think it might just serve to tighten up on certain aspects of things and change some fundamental cogs within that system. I can't see Britain actually leaving. But the point of it was that this person was saying, well, if Britain leave, well, Ireland doesn't have to leave because we've nothing to do with them. And I put in, well, see, that Act 1949, just like the Act in the Irish government of 1948, where they decided that Ireland could be described as a republic. And this is where the use of words and the purpose of words and the reason they use them is, it was easy then for the British Parliament to come out with this Act to say that we have nothing to do with the Republic of Ireland, which is fine, but all you have to do is go back to 1922, when the Republic of Ireland was not formed by King George. What was formed in 1922 was the Free State. So Ireland didn't come into it. Republic of Ireland didn't come into it. Era didn't come into it. It was called the Free State, which was set up by King George V. So unless someone, they come out with an act to say that Britain has nothing got to do with the Free State anymore, anything else that they write is pure bullshit. And they can write these things and give the impression that these things are happening. So anyway, one of the lads on the Facebook page, he put up part of the Queen's speech when she gave it up in Kilmainham. And all of what she was saying in the few brief minutes that he put up was that our special relationship with Ireland, and we and our special relationship, and we are more than friends. And it's incredible when you see it. It sounds very innocuous. It sounds lovely. And it sounds, wow, that's great that she's talking in this very peaceful manner. And we're all great buddies. And she has the sovereign seal and diamonds on her dress, which the whole purpose of her visit was for that, because she had to come back within a certain period of time to reclaim their so-called power over this country, which was the basis of why she visited Ireland in the first place, which is very difficult for people to understand, because they say, no. Look, as she was talking about, look at our friend's special relationship. Well, the special relationship is, it's not with Ireland, it's with the Free State. That's what was formed. And it was the Free State up until 1948. And the Taoiseach at the time, he had gone to Canada some dinner, and the presidential thing was before the president. We had a president here, we had still had the vice regal, you know, up in the Phoenix Park. And then we got a president. And the Taoiseach wanted a toast for the president. And there was a toast, all right. And he was sitting opposite this corner, or general or something. And he started giving out that the toast wasn't given to the president or to respect for Ireland or whatever. And the general told him that the toast was given to Ireland. And the toast that was given to Ireland was the toast to the Queen. And they are the words that were spoken to the Taoiseach at the time. And he came back and he said, he got so angry about it, and he was put in front of sitting and facing opposite him was a painting of, I can't remember what it was. But this is all documented, folks. I didn't make this up. You can look that up through on all the official sites, the government sites and everything else, anything I'm saying. It might not be word perfect what I'm saying, but it's the gist of it. And that's what he was told, that the toast was to the Queen, which she represents your country. So anyway, he came back and he convoluted this act through his anger. And all the act is to say that Ireland can be described as a republic. And the only thing that we have in the republic that's called the Republic of Ireland is the football team. Nothing else is called the Republic of Ireland. Nothing else, folks. Look it up. Look it up on the list of countries in Europe. As far as I know, the last time I looked, it doesn't say the Republic of Ireland. It says Ireland. So when they issue these words and issue these acts and statutes, and they say things like, we have nothing more to do with Ireland. No, they haven't. We have nothing more to do with Éire. No, we don't. We have nothing to do with the Republic of Ireland. Exactly. Because the Republic of Ireland doesn't exist. Ireland doesn't exist. Éire still exists. But they are in here running us under the Free State and have done since 1922. And again, they've confused and confounded the politics, which is part of their mantra, which is interesting. There was also another clip, Seanie, of Yes Minister that I saw. I'd seen it before. And they were trying to explain to the new Prime Minister the idea of why Britain went into Europe. And, of course, it's satire. But basically what they were saying was that they were doing what they were doing for hundreds of years, having the French fight the Germans, and the Germans fight the French, and the English fight the French, and the French fight the English, and the Dutch fight the Germans, and the Germans fight the French, and the French fight the Dutch, and all the rest of it. And the whole idea was that we're going into Europe to disrupt the whole thing. Now, that's a comedy programme, but can anybody tell me that it's not based on certain facts, or that it's likelihood that that is exactly what's happening at this point in time? I doubt it. As you say, many a true word said in jest. So that's that little bit of information there, folks. So when you see these acts and stuff, and they refer to Éire, Ireland, or Republic of Ireland, it's not referred to the proper name, which is the Free State. And if you go through history and remember Ian Paisley, he was always talking about the Free Staters. The Free Staters. And he used to rib the Southern politicians with all this and raise the ire of other people by stating this. But he was actually correct in what he was saying. He was telling people something and people didn't want to hear what he was saying. But it is a fact, and I believe it to be a fact, because it's all there if you want to do some study on it. But be careful when you're reading these things, and it could be just a couple of words that make it look like something, but it actually isn't.
Yeah, and one of those words, John, is the smallest word in the whole thing, is the word of.
Yeah.
Like, my understanding in legal terms, of means away from.
Yes.
So it's the Republic, and it all adds up very nicely, because if we are the Republic of Ireland, we are the Republic away from Ireland.
Yeah.
And yes, the Queen has a special relationship with Ireland, always had and still has. And that's what she meant by it.
Absolutely.
So.
Absolutely.
Like, and she was hitting the nail on the head for her, for the Crown system. They know exactly what they're saying and what they're doing.
Yeah.
And, yes, there is still very much so a special relationship, the Crown system and Ireland. And we are citizens of the Republic of Ireland. We are citizens removed from Ireland in their eyes.
Well, you see, it can't ever be Ireland. Because
we still don't have the ownership of the land in their eyes.
Yeah. And it can't ever be Ireland.
Servants.
It can't ever be called Ireland because it's segregated with the six counties and the south, which the sixth county is not the full province of Ulster. So they confuse people again with that and say, oh, Ulster says no, but it's not Ulster. You know, it's only six counties of Ulster. So it can never be classed as Ireland because Ireland is, well, it's not Ireland, it's Éire. And that has 32 counties in it. From top to bottom, it's 32 counties. So when they say we have nothing to do with Ireland, they are correct. Because Ireland doesn't exist at this present time because it's divided and segregated between six counties up the north and the 26 counties, apparently in the south, and three or four of them are up the north. So that's very confusing for people. That's very confusing for Irish people, and it confuses the life out of me, and I never knew about these things, and as I keep saying, so I can't really expect anybody anywhere else to understand this type of thing when the majority of Irish people don't even get it, and the so-called people who call themselves Republicans refuse to talk about these things. Well, the reason they refuse to talk about it is they're afraid that it will cause aggravation and war and bloodshed. And to be fair, I don't want any of that for anybody, you know, anywhere in the world.
Well, I think, John, what would serve us all very well, I mean, first of all, let's take the emotionality out of it.
Mm.
And, look at it. If what we are saying is bordering on being the truth of what's happening, I think it might serve us better just to look at it from a point of view of, wow, isn't that a very ingenious system they've created? Like, isn't it how they've manipulated us as a population? That sort of a whole game they play, like a game of words.
Mm-hmm.
So if we can look at it without emotionality, we will learn a lot more, and our understanding of the complex situation we're in will obviously become more apparent to us. And because of that, I think we'll be in a far better, stronger position to be able to undermine it, if that's what we want to do, or break free from it.
Well, yeah, breaking free from something and undermining. Well, there's one thing I'd like to say, Sean. And to whoever's listening out there and the people in the chat box, that I do not expect or would want that, say, the unionist community in the northern part of this island, that anything would happen to them or that they would have to leave or do anything of the sort. You know, not in my remit. I think we can be inclusive. We can be not exclusive, but inclusive of all things. To everyone and anyone, and I think that's the way to go. But it seems to be very difficult to have a conversation, given that the rules of the conversation should be that everybody is included in it, and that I particularly don't want anything from anybody up there, or to take anything away from anybody that they already have. I think that they have probably done wonders up there in the north of Ireland. Over the centuries, you know, they were the industrialists and they were very, you know, businessmen, and they were all this sort of thing. And it's just that they think they're part of another country. But they're, you know, I think they should certainly even be allowed stay here. And if they want to hold two passports or whatever, I think they should be entitled to it. All for the sake of peace and tranquility, and just let's get on with things. It's not me that started this. Are you, Sean?
Again, John, like, you're talking about unionists or Protestants or whatever. Religion.
No, I'm not talking about religion.
I think it's starting to happen to you as I'm mentioning that word. Like, what follows ideas around religion is emotionality.
Yeah.
We just get too emotional about these things. What leads on from all that emotionality is war and people fighting and going to the next level. And for the most part, most of these religions or whatever you want to call them are there's a lot of manipulation of words going on in them systems as well, no matter what they are, no matter what religions they are.
Sure. But the key to that conversation is, Sean, you brought it in, is religion. And that's why they even compounded the situation by pitting one part of Christianity against the other. Which again muddies the water to the point that people don't know whether they're talking to someone. Well, if you're up the north and if you are Protestant, well, you're definitely a unionist. That may not be the case, you know, where most of our top Republicans in Ireland were Protestant, you know, or Presbyterian or whatever. But they included that into it to make it more complicated, you know. And then unless we get rid of that conversation between Catholic and Protestant in this country, we'll never solve any other situation. And
we should be having a conversation about it, not getting rid of it. But we should be having an open-minded conversation about it. Just seeing all these, at their base, at their core, they're all belief systems, you know. And belief systems are something that we, as humans, we take on beliefs about certain things. And we the problem with a lot of beliefs is we hold them to be true. We're willing to die for them. We're willing to lose relationships with our brothers for them. At the end of the day, most of them, they're just beliefs.
Yeah.
I mean, you can drop a belief as fast as you can take it on if you're aware enough to see it for what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to look at, if we're willing to look at beliefs, see how are the question we need to ask ourselves about our belief systems in relation to these situations is how are they serving us? I being a Catholic, or I being a Protestant, or I being Irish, or I being whatever I want to believe in, how is it actually serving me in my life?
Yeah. Well, that's what I say. That's the second layer that really muddies the water to any sort of unemotional attachment or an emotional attachment. To try and extract that from the conversation is very difficult. But they put that in deliberately, and it was put in deliberately by Rome, not by anybody else.
And belief systems are formulated through the intellectual mode of consciousness, and with the clever usage of words, most of us have all become manipulated into believing certain things.
Yeah.
And through rhetoric then, and people that can whip up a fervor and sort of get at our emotionality, that's what gets us going then, and before we know it, we're going down taking actions and doing things that maybe later on we regret, like we're remorseful over it. And
exactly.
You know, in one sense, like we're...
I don't know how we started talking about this, but, you know, it does, you can see where we're going. It gets more complicated the more we go down into that. And we have to extract ourselves away from that, those belief systems, because now, they're using the Muslim community to further disturb and, upset all the little cogulous of a particular group, you know?
But these systems, this way of pitting man against man is an age old game. Like, I mean, there's nothing new about this. It's not the new game in town at all.
No,
nothing new about it. The unfortunate thing about it, and I suppose with TV and media and again sports, is culpable in this regard. We are fed all these things, and our minds become immersed in these things, and we are not really looking at things critically for what they are, you know?
Yeah.
People are watching soccer matches 7 nights of the week, and they're not making themselves aware of what's really happening in the world at all.
Yeah. Well, which goes back to what I was trying to say earlier on, I suppose, which I didn't know what I was going to be saying, but one of the things is, essentially, that as alternative media, I do believe for the most part, the majority of people have good intent. But I think we've only started the job really, and we were under the impression that a lot of people are thinking and there's a shift in consciousness, and there is certainly a shift in attitudes right around the world. And the ordinary person is becoming less fearful of, let's say, authority. However,
well, human beings have extraordinary qualities. For the most part, nearly every single human being is born with a pure heart, a pure core. The problem we suffer as human beings is we are easily corrupted. We are corruptible, not necessarily our own fault, but we are coming up through education systems and just belief systems that are corrupting us. And it's taking us a long, long time to wake up from those situations.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of good teaching on the planet at present. There's a lot of people waking up. I do believe that consciousness is moving on for the better. And People's Internet Radio is part of that movement. People that are listening in tonight are part of that movement. And generally speaking, most of the population out there have an awareness that, you know, that we are in a bit of a fix in a way, like our systems aren't the ideal for us, and people are looking for solutions. Things like people are seeking better ways of living, there's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
And it's happening in many regards, like a lot of technological advances have come from the minds of very capable men and women. Like, it's man's intellect has created most of the technology we're living through at the moment. It's a wonderful technology. The fact that we can communicate tonight across the airwaves is really fascinating.
It is, of course.
We can share information and all that.
And I can come on and give out a chat box, and I can give out to you, or I can give out to Tom, and I can do all of those things, and people can ring in and give out to me if they want. And we should be using it. The base of what I'm saying is that there isn't.
Well, we just have to figure out better ways of using it. I mean, we're all learning as we go along, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Maybe within another 12 months or 2 years, we'll even have better shows on People's Internet Radio, and that people will be doing. We get our heads together and get our imagination. You know, again, inventive imagination. Progressive imagination, that's what we need to tap into.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's given us all the technology we have.
And it's a very important thing you said earlier, which is really important, that, you know, that girl over in England setting up the football teams, the Irish games over there, it really starts with one person. Everything just starts with one person, folks. Whether it's me, Sean, or anybody in the chat box, Sherry, Steve, Gary, all the guys and girls in the chat box listening in. It really starts with one person doing stuff, acting and acting things out, using the information. And we can't rest on any laurels at this point in time. And because it has been interrupted and it has been infiltrated, and there's a lot of nonsense going on. Some of it serious and some of it not so serious, by the very people who want, are supposed to be in the alternative media, which is sad to see, but obviously, there's a lot of people probably making a little bit of money out of trying to disrupt what we're trying to do. We're all not trying to do the same thing. We have a broad base, and we have the idea of seeking solutions to things, still is very, very important. Sometimes we lose track of that. It's just about seeking solutions that suit people and suit predicaments and everything else. But Shawnee, I've no more solutions tonight. The only solutions we have now is to hit the high road, because Sherry's coming on and Steve is on a second steak, although I think Sherry told him not to be eating steak anymore. I'm not sure what she told him anyway, but he's probably munching a bag of chips or something on the sly or something. I don't know. You never know. He has more work to do. So myself and Sean are going to say good night, and thanks very much for listening. And Tom will be on with us at some stage. That's a definite. We may have to do another show during the week or something, like to broaden our horizons, Sean. And
yeah, well, We're hoping to guess David Wallace might be back with us next week. If people remember David from a few weeks back about farming issues and whatever. So we're hoping to have another few guests as well with him. So we are hoping that that'll make for a very interesting program next Saturday night, especially in relation to farming and environmental matters for that effect, you know.
Yeah, brilliant. Looking forward to that. So anybody who's interested in biodynamic farming and all that stuff.
Organic farming, biologic, a whole lot.
Yeah, he's a biologist working in that. And yeah, so anyway, good night, folks. John, thanks very much. Steve, thank you very much for hosting me again. More than likely, I'll see you next week, requesting you to do that as well, wherever. Who knows what's a week is a long time in politics, as they say. So, Sean, you go off and keep Tom company and make him a cup of tea there. Tell him I said hi. Say hi to Margie and all the gang down there. And I'll talk to you all next week, folks, with Sean, et cetera, et cetera. So good night and take care.
Okay, good night, everybody.